Hi, welcome to the Fat Gypsy Show, everybody. This is the Fat Gypsy, and today we are joined by someone very special, a sociologist. Thank you so much for coming on, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Man, it's my absolute pleasure.
No, but I do.
And thank you for being interested in what I'm probably going to say.
Yes.
Or not say.
I'm very interested in what you have to say. That's why I want you on here, and I think everybody else is going to be interested too. And let me just say that I met this man last night, and very interesting dude. And we're in Pai in Thailand, and he's here on vacation, right?
That's right, yeah.
How are you enjoying it so far?
I am loving it here in Thailand. It's absolutely spectacular. So you go away with an idea of what you want to get from a holiday, and I guess Thailand has so far delivered in spades everything I hoped it would be.
Yeah?
Yes, because I wanted to come here for quite a while.
When was the first time you would say you like heard about Thailand or thought about coming here?
So I studied in Leeds in the north of England around 2000, and from 2000 onwards.
What school?
That was the university in Leeds, so the University of Leeds.
University of Leeds, okay.
Yeah, there's a couple in Leeds. There's the Metropolitan University and there's Leeds University.
Right.
So there I met a girl in, as you do in like the university flats.
Uh-huh.
In my first year of university. So I'd be with this girl for the next 5 years. And yeah, that was an interesting one. But basically she had spent a whole year in between when she'd left school, living in a small village in Thailand.
Really?
Yeah, and this girl.
Do you know where?
Sorry?
Do you know where, which village?
I could not tell you where, but I know that she's, you know, was teaching in the school and mm-hmm. that she got very involved in the, you know, and I think she and her friend were the only Farang in that town.
Okay.
So anyway, she had an amazing experience and she would not shut up about it, obviously. But actually, I found it really compelling because she also introduced me to the food.
Right. Oh, you didn't know Thai food before her?
No.
Okay.
So what, I was like 18 years old.
Okay.
There weren't really actually that many Thai restaurants. She's reminded me that I used to drive her out of town to get Thai food from the local takeaway because there wasn't one in the city center.
Right.
You know?
Now London's full of Thai food now.
Now it is. Yeah. Now it's exploded and it's everywhere, but it wasn't then. So yeah, just her enthusiasm really, like her love for the place and the people.
The food's amazing.
Yeah.
The food's
yeah.
fucking amazing here. What's your favorite Thai food? Like, what's your favorite?
Well, the best dish that I've had, and Chris, who you're going to speak to, who we had when since we've been in Thailand, was the khao soi, which is a dish.
It's
in
like
the
an
north.
Orange sausage with noodles.
It's like a broth, beefy broth with coconut,
mm.
but like a soup, and it's got crispy noodles. It's mm-hmm. absolutely spectacular. I heard about that on a Netflix show actually. So we hunted down the very khao soi shop.
Oh, the one
in the documentary.
Okay, cool.
And we were just.
Where was this?
In Chiang Mai.
Oh, I want to know
in
about
Chiang Mai,
it.
Which is a lovely little place.
I want to know. You're gonna tell me what's it called?
What the?
The restaurant that you went.
Oh, khao soi krud.
Okay. We'll figure it out, and I will let you guys know which one it is because I know a lot of you are listening from Thailand.
It was featured on the Netflix show, Somebody Feed Phil.
I've never
seen
that.
It's the guy who created Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh,
and he's traveling around. It's pretty cute. He's got a very expressive face.
Shit.
But anyway, I posted an Instagram snap of this dish, this
khao soi.
Yeah. And hashtagged it to shit or whatever. And actually, Phil from that show, he actually liked it.
No!
So I felt like
fucking hell,
the
that's
circle
awesome.
Was complete.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was
oh,
really
shit.
Cool.
Yeah, because you like, yeah, it's like you paid attention to his report, and I'm
exactly.
sure he's very appreciative that you enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, man.
All right, so let's start talking about the interesting stuff.
All right, what do you consider
not that that's not interesting, but like
what do you consider interesting?
Your field of study.
Okay, my field of studies.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I want to, like...
So I think it would be maybe disingenuous to say that I was a sociologist, because I'm not, I don't currently work as a sociologist.
But you
But I studied sociology at university. And
you have your diploma in sociology, right?
I have a BA.
Okay.
In sociology.
Okay.
But since I studied it, I've retained a respect and like absolute fascination with sociology, because it's just really is a subject that sheds light on so many things.
I think if you study sociology for 3 years, which is what you did, right?
Yes.
I think if you study sociology for 3 years and receive credit and accreditation for it, mm-hmm. I think you're considered a sociologist, whether that's what you do as a profession or not.
In my heart, I'm a sociologist.
Right, so you're a sociologist. It doesn't matter what society says because you don't have that job. You're a fucking sociologist.
No. If you study a particular scientific field,
right.
You maybe view the world slightly through that lens.
Of course.
So I think
it influences everything. Yeah, when you learn those stats, when you're learning about sociology.
Yeah. But even if you're a scientific person and you're interested in the composition of minerals and whatever, right. That's what you look for. And when you study sociology, you look for structures in society,
right.
And patterns and systems,
right.
And
right.
You know, and you're interested in what the dynamics of that are.
So what made you want to go into it in the first place?
Because I fucked up the first degree I started.
In
which,
what?
Which was called cognitive science.
What does that...
So I am not a mathematical or... unfortunately, the science education was very lacking in my school, I found, when okay. I was younger. So...
Was it a public school or...?
It was a Jewish school.
A Jewish school?
It was quite a religious Jewish school,
You would think that the Jews teach them good math.
you know what? They probably do, and probably everyone was...
Oh, science, you said, wasn't good. Math was alright. Accounting was strong.
The problem is that with a religious school I found, they don't, you know, unfortunately, they prioritize sometimes... They have their priorities a bit muddled up.
Well, religion has to be the number one thing that you study,
so there
right?
was more... There was a lot of focus on, obviously, the religious education, and there
and
was
Hebrew.
A focus... And there was a focus on the other stuff, but some of the teaching was pretty fucking shoddy,
okay.
To be honest.
Okay, so would you send your kid there?
Fuck no. but I still don't have any it sounds like I do, but I don't have any malice towards my school.
I
feel quite warm towards it, but
they didn't do that bad of a job if you got your degree in sociology either.
Exactly, that's the thing. Everyone who went to that school survived in some way and went on to do quite well,
right?
But not I don't think well, I don't know, it's hard to say now, you got me. Maybe it was tough love. Maybe they just taught us shoddy teaching, so we had to go and do it ourselves.
Maybe.
I don't know.
That would be pretty smart, actually, because it's way better when you learn yourself than when someone teaches you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was high school, you went to Jewish school?
Yeah.
Okay, so then...
And primary school as well.
And primary. So you speak fluent Hebrew then?
No.
No?
No. I can read Hebrew characters.
Okay.
I can read the text for the purposes of praying.
Okay.
But actually, I can't understand the words I'm reading, which is quite ironic.
But you know how they sound, but you don't
know
what
they
say.
Like if we were to do like one of the Jewish festivals, I'd be able to read the prayers and whatnot from the book.
Okay. But you don't know what the fuck it means.
Well, it's all like, blessed is this and blessed is he.
Okay.
And so.
So it's the same as all the other ones, pretty much, just different language.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. Yeah.
What in terms of what Jewish philosophy?
I'm speaking specifically about the prayers right now, not the philosophy. The
prayers
specifically,
yeah,
like bless this meal, bless this bread, bless
absolutely.
The wine.
Yeah,
shit
yeah, 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 yeah.
Right.
So okay. One thing, so the sociological theory that I've learned behind religion, which I really like, is that so I think it's Weber that is the sociologist that this is attributed to, where it's about this. He talks about the sacred and the profane.
Okay.
And that's basically what religion does, is that it divides things into. This is sacred, this is cursed, don't touch it.
Right.
A lot of religions follow that structure.
Most.
Yeah.
Even Buddhism.
And I guess because that's necessary in some extent for humans to stay away from some things and bring in other things.
Well,
but
I
it's
mean,
prescriptive the way it happens in religion. Too prescriptive.
Well,
wait, man, are we going this deep?
That's not mine. You have to drink this. This hurts, probably.
Maybe we should back up a bit, because I feel like we're going
into No, we're good. We're good.
This religious sinkhole.
No, that's fine. As long as it's organic, that's the point of it. So we can talk about sociology behind religion. That's super interesting for me.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Done,
I think that's maybe what more... Is that it's an organizing principle for people, religion. why people, I find that people sometimes turn their nose up at religion. You know, they say it's a cause of bad things that happen. And, but I think if you know history and you know, maybe look at it with a slightly sociological or anthropological viewpoint, religion is, has been the guiding principle that's helped people civilize over generations.
Organized religion, spirituality, it depends how far you're going back.
Quite far back. What I'm saying is that people assume that we are innately know not to hurt each other or to steal from each other. That people believe that's an innate thing to humans. But what they don't realize is that religion has been the organizing principle that has...
But there's an argument in what you're saying right now. Sorry to interrupt you, but I don't want to forget. If you look at Japanese society, mm-hmm. okay, they're the most atheist society on the planet. Uh-huh. They don't have any thieves. They don't have any crime. Japan is arguably one of the safest places on earth all the time, and they have zero religion guiding them. So that argument is a generalization, because
it's not. But what I'm saying is that, so it's not like the Chinese aren't without their superstitions and their
Japanese, not Chinese.
Sorry. The Japanese likewise. I might misstep here because I'm not an expert in Japanese culture by any means.
Neither am I.
So I'm just wildly speculating here. Okay. But my understanding would be that Japanese people do have certain superstitions. They still believe. When I talk about religion, everything, an ideology is a religion. I think that people distinguish too much between, oh, that's a religion. Like, communism is, it's just a system of beliefs.
I was talking about organized religion specifically,
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Before we talk about organized religion, you've got to look at why people are religious.
Right. Well, it's, in my opinion, why are people religious?
Yeah.
Because it's passed on to them by their family and their siblings.
That's exactly correct.
And it goes, continues on.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. But sometimes people don't take it on. Sometimes people take it on very vehemently and they're very into it.
Right,
of course. It's a weird thing.
And then sometimes rebel and don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, or go away completely from it. So it's a spectrum of people.
But the norm follows in their parents' footsteps.
Absolutely. Yeah. If your parents were religious, you're 10 times more likely to be religious.
Exactly.
Make your children religious.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
So I think religion is very, very important to some people. And for me, it's not so much. I don't personally know what I believe. I'm not going to say I don't believe in God, and I'm not going to say I do believe in God, because nothing I've experienced or seen in my life would lead me to believe there is or there isn't. If I look at it mathematically, scientifically,
brilliant.
It
yeah.
doesn't so much make sense that there's one.
Okay, well, this is the thing. When I hear someone like you talk, that's very heartening to hear people recognize. So what I find unappealing personally is not people who are agnostic, or I'm probably along the same lines as you in terms of. I wouldn't make a bet one way or the other, mm-hmm. or I would make a bet one way or the other, and I'd have 50-50 chance.
Right.
But what I see with atheists, for example, is that they're so vehemently, again, I'm sorry that I use that word, they're so into it in terms of disproving God.
You can't disprove someone.
No, you can't. And they think they're being rational, but they're not. They don't understand.
They're the exact same thing, just on the other side. That's their religion. Yes. Atheism is their religion.
So therefore, exactly. So therefore, atheism is a religion.
It is. It's the anti-religion religion.
It's a kind of anarchistic view of existence. Arguably. Sorry, that was controversial. Sorry.
No, it's not. It's not.
But that's
really...
what my emotional response is towards them. That I feel that
they believe in a universal or a galaxy, anarchy. But
I mean, I love anarchy as much as the next person. But I'm just saying,
anarchy's a tough one. People are fucking.
No, sorry. Let me reformulate it. I think that's it. It's more people believing on the extreme in either direction.
Right.
I think they're deluded.
Exactly.
They're deluded.
Exactly.
Because faith is one thing, but... Well, it's just faith. That's the thing that's like the, you know, the get out card that they use. Oh, I've got faith, so you can act like a moron.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, well, a lot of people use a lot of excuses to act like fucking morons, man.
Exactly, and they'll use religion, or they'll use politics, or they'll use...
Unfortunately, there are so many fucking morons that religion might be important, even though it's the cause of a lot of pain and suffering and death and whatever. It's also the reason a lot of people who are suffering have fucking hope.
Yeah.
And I've seen it with my own eyes traveling to third world countries that these people have nothing.
Yeah.
They don't have food. They barely have a bed.
Yeah.
You know, it's something on the floor. It's not a mattress, whatever. Whatever they have, they're struggling like crazy to eat and feed their kids. They need something to believe in, or else they're fucked.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I see. I see family, the family structure arranged around religion. That's common to all religions.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, like, what you don't see with religion is the family life, the internal life, which is warm because they're connected through something bigger. And that is such a powerful thing. Like,
it is.
You can't deny it.
It is.
And that's what it is. Like, why is one lifestyle choice more valid than any other? You know, if someone gains satisfaction through that, if they, you know, obviously the problems, I don't need to go into all the problems with organized religion and tell you that.
We can go into it.
No,
what's your opinion of the problems?
Well,
I'm curious. No, but I have my opinions. What are yours?
It's pretty obvious.
So give me like two or three obvious ones and that we could discuss in your opinion.
Well, okay. Like, well, as the accusation goes that people say religion causes conflict, I guess that's kind of undeniable.
That's undeniable.
That's kind of undeniable. Yeah. I mean, I can't look at the world and not say that's true. It is true.
Even within itself, look at Islam, as I said, I don't believe
it's the sole cause of all friction in the world.
Of course not.
That's bullshit and reduction.
Of course
that's reductionist,
not.
Isn't it?
The financial system has a big deal to do with it too. It's not just religion.
All sorts of things have such a complex...
The fact that we have borders and countries creates conflict as well.
Yeah,
like, there's so many things that create conflict. So yeah, that's a good point. What's another one that you think?
I think the problem is, I'll talk about the UK, is that it does, there is... You know, there's this reaction, political reaction now against, organized religion, really. Like, you know, they're threatening, like, for example, the rules around kosher slaughter or the equivalent.
What do you mean they're threatening the rules around kosher
halal slaughter? Halal meat. So
yeah, but what are they threatening? Like, they're
no,
saying...
No, I'm saying...
Gonna...
Sorry, I'm actually just skipping ahead here.
Okay.
What I mean to say is that, you know, that immigrant populations are under the spotlight in Europe, for
yes,
example.
Of course.
But the problem is, on the flip side of that, is that UK has seen, the UK in particular has seen, it's undeniable there has been an influx of immigrants into the UK, not just from Pakistan and Bangladesh and all these places, but also from
everywhere,
all across Europe, Romania,
Africa too, Africa,
Poland,
everywhere.
Yes, so the problems aren't imagined, they are real. But the problem with religion is that you have sometimes very insular communities who don't integrate, and I know that's, you know, why should they, you might ask, but I do think it's important that you
of
have
course
social
it's
cohesion
important. No, of course,
and
it's
I think
important.
And I think that, you know, these people who are angry, they have a right to be angry because they're living in a very impersonal world, and I don't think it's fair with, you know, not because and like, it's, I'm not defending anything xenophobic because I'm Jewish myself, I'm an immigrant, I'm just saying that the politicians...
When
just,
you say an immigrant, hold on, you were born in England though, right?
I was born in England,
right,
yeah.
Okay.
My parents though, my grandparents were
immigrant family then.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Not
so what I'm saying is I'm not saying, well, okay, I'll continue.
Continue,
about,
sorry.
Sorry. What I was going to say was that, yeah, it's basically, if the politicians were to manage socially immigration better, then it wouldn't have been such, you wouldn't have such divided towns as you have in the UK. Like, there's a town in the north of England, I think it's, you know, it's a nice town, it's a Yorkshire town. I love Yorkshire because I studied
I
in
Yorkshire.
Leeds, and Bradford is just down the road from it.
Yeah.
But Bradford, for example, is a very split town, and there's a few cities like this that are kind of split down the middle between a white population and an Asian population.
Mm-hmm.
And you do see some lovely bits of integration, but I think for the most part you've got two communities that just cut down the middle, and like, even like the, you know, I think they're mainly Bangladeshi, actually, I'm not sure, either Pakistani or Bangladeshi, but they have their almost their own economy within that area,
right?
And I don't know, it's just, The Hasidic Jewish community in London. There's an area called Stamford Hill.
Magna Carta? Is that the Magna Carta?
No. That's another sect. That's another sect. Nutty sect. Okay. But
the, nutty sect?
Nutty.
Oh, nutty. Okay.
Nutty, yeah.
I thought you said naughty.
Well, they're again. Yeah, but Hasidim, basically.
Right.
Like you'd see in New York.
Right.
But they've got a very insular, closed community, and it's, to be honest with you, I find it reflects. There's a thing in Judaism which I like, is which is that you don't create a Hillel Hashem.
What's that?
Which means that you don't bring God's name into disrepute, really.
Okay.
But I see that's quite broad.
Okay.
I think if you're not smiling at people as you walk down the street and helping, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
In your kind of living in the place, but you're not connected to the place where you're in. I would rather that it wasn't like that.
Of course, wouldn't it be a happier world if everybody smiled at each other when they walked down the street?
Yeah, you know? I mean, but it's so, like, you know, it's so...
But that's not only Hasidic Jews that do that. That's fucking everybody in...
I was just pointing them out as a personal example because, right. You know, obviously I am Jewish, so I can identify with them.
Right.
But I can't identify with them, really.
They're extremists. It's hard to identify with this extremist, no matter what religion or background they come from. If you're an extremist, it's going to be hard for me to relate to you in any way.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess people who know me pretty well know that I'm an extremist, but in different fucking ways, you know? Yeah. So not with my views on
I mean,
on
let's social. Get back to it here. We've been in Thailand for... How long have you been in Pai, which is the town we're at?
Not 24 hours. I haven't been here 24 hours in Pai. I got here last night at 6 p.m.
Like... We've had a pretty extreme time here. Oh, I have, the time I've been in this town so far.
Yeah?
So you're saying, you know, extremist, but it's good to go extreme sometimes. It's just in what direction. Maybe they get some sort of thrill from it.
You don't think it's fear that keeps them in it? Fear that God won't, or just some kind of fear. I'm not gonna try and guess what they fear because I don't know them well enough. So
I don't think it's fear though. I think it's actually a rush to know you're doing something. Well, of course it's a rush. I think that's what it is. Maybe that's why what people don't misunderstand about extremism, that it's addictive and it's
that's what I'm addicted to.
It's a power
to.
Thing.
That's what I'm addicted to.
What's your extremism?
Everything and anything that won't affect my loved ones or people I care about. Oh no, because I put my life in danger all the time.
Okay, well, I think that's really dumb. You should stop doing that.
No, but I can't have, like, a regular fucking life. I can't do it. It drives me crazy. I get depressed. I've tried over and over again.
Yeah.
Now, when I say I put my life in danger, I mean, like, I do dumb shit. Like, when I was 24, 25, I went to Jamaica to try and buy a kilo of cocaine to bring it back to my country to sell it and make, like, $100,000.
Yeah, I would have never have done that.
No, right now? Are you fucking kidding? Just saying that, I think I'm a fucking retard, you know?
Yeah.
We ended up getting caught by police, and I cried my eyes out in front of the police.
So, like, what happened? You were put in jail?
No, we paid to get out.
So, I don't know, me and Chris, this is, sorry, I keep talking about Chris, but Chris is just sat over here. But we've been talking about us, you know, I'm on a 2-week jaunt here in between jobs in London. I'm pretty much part of the rat race in London.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, while I want to touch that kind of extreme lifestyle for a little bit, we kind of, I don't know, a bit paranoid about safety the whole time while out here. Not paranoid, because, like, we're still enjoying ourselves.
This,
you know,
is one of the safest places I've ever been in my fucking life. There's no female that could walk anywhere in this fucking country out for it. Like, they could, it's just, no one's gonna fuck with you.
No, do you know what, man? I really do feel that about Thailand, that there's this really feeling that everyone just lets you get on with your own thing.
It took me about 8 months to get to know what I just said, though. So don't think you're gonna see that in 2 weeks of being here. You know?
No. But, you know, I think that shit can happen anywhere. That's my
thing. People are still people.
I've been robbed you don't think there are guns in the UK, but it might have been a replica, but I've had a gun held to me in London. I've seen a hit and run in Berlin, you know, I've seen, you know, shit can happen anywhere. And maybe that's paranoid. Actually, maybe I'll tell you why I probably have a fear of accidents and
please
stuff.
Please do, yeah, please.
But you know, until you when you witness an accident, time stops, doesn't it?
What kind of accidents are you speaking of?
Like in Berlin, it was weird. I've been, the only other time I've traveled on my own anywhere was Berlin. And I flew into the city, came from the airport to my place, stayed in the wrong part of town. I stayed in like the kind of, I don't know, like tourist district. I wasn't in the cool part. I should have been in East Berlin, but I went there the rest of the time. But I get out of the, I freshen up in the hotel room, walk down to the street, walk maybe, and these blocks, you know, the huge, the boulevards are so big in Berlin. They're like, they're, you know, dwarf anything in London. They're huge. And I've walked a few blocks, maybe I've walked for half an hour, come around this onto this kind of huge boulevard, car comes speeding around the corner, strikes this girl bang in front of me. I saw the driver kind of, he wasn't going to stop, he was just like speeding up. I don't know what he was running from. But what I'm saying is that those kind of memories, they kind of, they're kind of filmed onto your brain, aren't they?
Yes.
The moment of impact.
Yes, you know, it imprints on you, for sure.
It does imprint on you.
Yeah.
So my, so basically the personal admission about my kind of life was that my mum died in a car crash in 2010. So that's
your mum died in a car crash in 2010.
Yes. Fuck, I'm sorry. Yes. My sister was driving the car.
Is she okay?
My sister hasn't got, didn't have a scratch. Well, she probably had a few scratches.
She must feel so fucking guilty.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean, she does. She's never said she feels guilty, but
no. But to have to live with that for the rest of your fucking life is not fun.
Yeah, there have been other kind of expressions that she might feel that way.
Of course. Yeah. It's impossible that she doesn't.
No, of course.
You know, my ex-wife crashed a car and put me in a wheelchair, and she felt fucking responsible. She did. She said she didn't, of course, but I know that she did, because she stayed with me for like 2.5 years wiping my ass before she left.
Yeah, there you go.
That's pity.
Yeah. One more story. One more story.
Please.
Is my best friend is he's a doctor, but he's got a friend. Are we still rolling?
Yeah, we are. I just want to see how much time we have left so that we don't cut out randomly.
So, my best friend has a friend who is a bike guy. He likes bikes.
Motorcycles, yeah.
Motorcycle guy. You know, and a few months back, he was showing me on his phone, I remember, the, like, some races they do on some island, and maybe it's like the Channel Islands or something. I think it was the Isle of... There's a big motor bike race on, I think it's the Isle of Man, which is...
I know that, yeah, it's the Channel Island.
Is it Channel Island?
It's in the channel, no?
Yes, yeah. I've been there. Yeah. The people all look the same.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah, he was showing me like, you know, stuff on YouTube of like these bikes, and it's just like people coming off bikes. Uh-huh. And like, you know, I don't want to make this horrible association, but yeah, he did have a really bad accident, that guy. Life-changing stuff. And I don't know, I think we all owe it to ourselves. And I understand your thrill-seeking and all this stuff, but I think your personal safety and your health are the one thing you truly own. So, and also I work, I've just left working for a terminal illness charity. So I hear a lot about people who, of no kind of choice of their own or, you know, who chooses to have a terminal illness, but people who are thrown into a...
People that have...
A life and...
I think people who have very good insurance plans pray for an illness sometimes so they don't have to go their fucking stupid jobs anyway.
Man, that's dark.
But maybe I think that's true. I think, at least in the United States, I know there's some people
We spoke to a girl in a hostel? No, we went to see the elephants here, because there are a lot of elephants in Thailand. And I think we went to one of the ethical parks here where they've actually taken elephants that have been injured elsewhere. But we were talking to an older Canadian woman, and she had said her sister had got cancer, and she'd said that her sister was quite a depressive person, and when she found out she had the diagnosis, I can't remember what sort of cancer it was now, lung cancer, I don't think she'd smoked,
which is why I smoke a lot, because
that's a different subject.
Yeah, I know.
But
So she...
She basically said that her sister had kind of opened up after having the terminal diagnosis, that she was a really depressed person and now she was living her life. And I've heard that quite a few times.
Of course.
I've heard that quite a few times in my job.
Because people don't get scared. They're like, fuck, I'm going to die. Yeah. I better live now.
Yeah, everyone's scared to live because they're scared to, I don't know what. You know, yeah, as you just said, it.
Yeah?
Yeah, so... yeah, I guess there's some truth in that. That if you were faced with your mortality, then you do start to appreciate life.
People don't realize how quick it goes.
Exactly.
They take advantage of the fact that 24 hours takes a long time.
And also, I think having lost a parent. So I wasn't so young, but I was I just turned 30 actually. So.
Young in the young-ish. Scheme of things.
So
it's not a kid. You're lucky you weren't a kid. At least you had your mum through your childhood, you know?
But you never really know that people aren't there forever until they're actually not. You can't know what that feels like until... So I think, having had that allows me to kind of, I guess, empathise with... Yeah, maybe it's given me more empathy. Maybe that is a benefit of... I mean, it's a hot, you know, it's a terrible thing. But
even if it's the worst fucking thing on the planet... You could always pull something, you could find something positive in it.
Yeah, if you want to. Yeah,
you can, always. Because for every negative, there's a equal positive reaction as well, you know? So even if it's a horrible thing, like I lost my best friend in a house fire. I listened to him burn to death when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what it's like to lose that important person in your life. Mm-hmm. And it was a horribly negative thing. But at the same time, I can't say I didn't gain anything from it. Like, I gained a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Nothing positive. No, there is some shit positive. I feel like I can go through anything now that
I've been through. Well, that's what I was going to say. Are you ever going to let that happen again?
It was an accident. It's not like I let it happen in the first
place. No, I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean that.
I know
like
what
that.
You mean. I'm joking.
But is that the energy you're throwing out now that, you know, I think that experience has helped you resolve, like you said, there is a positive thread there because I don't...
Yeah, because
I think once you've experienced something, you can't unexperience it.
Exactly, and it makes you grow. It makes you grow. It makes you mature.
Exactly, and if you're not dead, then you carry on.
Then you carry on.
Yeah.
And if you don't, bad on you.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, especially if you've had all the benefits of a Western, as you were saying, you know, like you've got no excuse whatsoever. You're not lacking in any of the. You know, shelter or food or anything like that. And there are, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think it merits saying that. I think you've got.
Go ahead.
I don't know who the debt's to. It's not to who's it? To God, to fucking government. I don't know. To yourself. You've got a debt to someone to fucking do a good job of your life, though.
Right. I want to go back to something you said before that triggered me a little bit. I hate using that word, by the way. I can't believe I just fucking used it. Trigger warning. No. So listen. You said that if the politicians did a better job with immigration, maybe things would be different.
I don't know if that's true.
What do you think they could do differently?
No, can I tell you what it is? Is that is the real motive, the real reason that all this stuff is happening in the UK at least. Okay, let me get this. I've lost my thread a second, but I was saying basically that what people are really upset about isn't immigrants or people of another colour or another religion. Is that I think that the problem that hasn't been acknowledged, like for example in the Brexit debate, which we spoke about earlier before we started recording, just very briefly, but you know what's really upsetting people is the way it's just got less fair basically. The economic system's got less fair because the reason that is because they have opened up markets. You know, that's what Europe is really. It's expanding. It's one. You're no longer individual economies contained within countries.
Right.
You're now one big economy.
Right.
And you know, I'm not going to get all, but you know, essentially, if you've opened up the markets, you can move capital around, which is why no one pays any fucking tax if they're a corporation.
Right.
And you also allow movement of labor between markets. You allow cheap labor to go where it's most wanted.
So, hold on.
What does that do? Wait. What does it do? It depresses wages.
Of course.
And especially it depresses the wages of white working class and ethnic minority.
Everybody's wages. Everyone's getting paid. Everybody that's not a professional.
Everyone's getting paid less. No. I think it even affects the middle class as well in terms of their wages depressed. Beyond what they are. I mean,
when I say professional, I mean like a doctor, lawyer, Anybody with, like, let's say a PhD, professional, doctor, scientist.
I was talking more like...
Yeah, no, like, obviously, an electrician will probably feel it too, obviously.
Well, you know? Yeah, they will. Yeah.
So, no, I'm talking about the people who are considered professional.
Well, how many of our doctors... I work for... Marie Curie is a healthcare organization in the UK. Mm-hmm. They provide nursing care.
Privately or
no? It's okay. All free. Okay. It's paid, partly paid by the government, but most of the money comes from fundraising.
Okay.
They provide nurses in people's homes and through hospices and stuff.
I was
like
in
that.
Love with a girl from Kent who was, who did that. Who was nurse for one of those companies. Maybe it's that one. I don't.
She
remember.
She would have given you an amazing sponge bath.
She did give me a few of those. Thank you, Lizzie, baby. I love you. I know you hate me, but I love you very much.
So, what was I saying, really? I've lost my thread.
Sorry about that. I had to...
No. Yeah. that's
But you so can... you work for a company in the UK that provides nurses and care for elderly and sick, or just elderly, or...
People who are dying, basically. Okay. Yeah, people who are dying at the end. But what I was going to say in relation to that is that I understand the health service to some extent. I look at, you know, and the charity, and I'm now going to another organization, which is called a healthcare think tank.
Okay.
And they basically do research and analysis on healthcare, on public health and stuff like that. But I guess what I was saying is I understand the healthcare system and the professionals in the, how many of our doctors are from India and from other places, from as of also
most
Pakistan
of them,
and other countries.
Most of them Chinese.
All over Europe as well, doctors, Indian. Professionals from everywhere. Yeah. So, yeah, I think my best friend is a doctor and he does well. Mm. He has had to work for it, man.
Of course, doctors have the hardest jobs on the planet.
No, you don't understand. They're under, like...
I do understand. I was raised around them. Yeah. I understand very, very much. The study never stops when you're a doctor.
But in the UK especially, doctors are really having a squeeze on them. I think it's really...
What kind of doctor is your friend?
So even this immigration stuff, it's not about immigration. It's about where we're at politically now.
Right.
Which is that... basically things have been everyone's so polarized now towards the left, you know, left of center and right of center. Mm. in the UK again, I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That they just kick around healthcare like it's a fucking political football. It's not, you know, it's just point scoring. One side's trying to privatize it, the other's just like,
well, the NHS is a fucking nightmare.
No, it's a great organization.
It's a nightmare. I broke my shin and I went there and it was a nightmare. I mean, I got treated fine. The other people that were in there did not at all.
Well, this is... yeah, I can't deny that. There's variations in care, basically.
Yeah.
And no, I mean... oh, I don't know, man. I got to get my head in this stuff for my new job, but...
So what's your actual job? Like, what do you do? What's your position going to be in this?
It's going to... Well, I've always been in public relations. I've worked for a PR agency in the past.
Okay.
And working for pharmaceutical companies. Mm. And I've also worked... for pretty much that working, and also as of now in the voluntary sector for Marie Curie. But what I do is public relations in terms of trying to get favorable mentions of the organization or their product or whatever in the media.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But now for this healthcare think tank, it's the same thing, but it's promoting this research that they do. And, you know, they might say that they feel that certain things need more funding or, you know.
Okay, so are you still in PR with this new company?
Yeah,
okay.
Except I'm now called an external affairs manager.
It's fancy.
Yeah, that's the first fancy job title I've had.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, well, you're a smart dude, so you definitely, I can see how you would be good in your job. You're good at talking to people.
Thank you. I like writing. Press release is a very formulaic thing. Mm-hmm. You know, once you know how to structure a story.
Do you write those?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I write. Yeah, that's pretty much what my job consists of, is writing press releases, formulating stories, doing the groundwork, you know, to work out what story that the organization needs to tell.
Okay.
And then just, you know, all stories are made up to some extent. That, you know, they're based on something, but you can dramatize them, you can sensationalize them. And that's what you need to do today to get yourself heard.
Of course. The media doesn't want boring whatever they
want.
No
one wants to be bored.
No, they want something interesting. Feed us a little bit of interesting shit.
Yeah, we need stimulation.
Yeah. And the people don't want boring shit either. That's why the media doesn't want it.
But I'll tell you this, the media is the most disgusting. In the UK especially, they are, like the tabloid newspapers, for example, are just like, they epitomize the bad journalism. They are just, you know, you see
like the Rupert Murdoch papers.
It's they're so sexist. Yeah. You're like, so in the UK, you've got the white van man who's the yob, like, he's like leaning out his window going, "All right, love," you know, like, "Oh, show us your tits." Like every of these red top newspapers is written for this guy, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, and these journalists who are writing this shit,
what they are is page three journalists, is what.
Yeah, but these journalists have been to Oxford and Cambridge, and they got suddenly get into the mindset of a fucking white van driver, and yeah, it's tits and ass, and I love tits and ass as much as the
next
person.
It's what sells.
And you know what? It's despicable. I will always pick up the red top and go to page three to see. They stopped it recently, but
no.
Always, yeah.
They stopped page three?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
England's not liberal anymore.
This is like we've got this kind of antiquated, so you know the Carry On movies?
Hold on. I have to bring something up since we're on the subject. What the fuck is the deal with having to sign up to watch porn in the UK? I'm hearing about this everywhere, and they're about to make you sign up to a database if you want to watch porn on your computer.
I never heard about that, man.
It's coming. Very shortly. Mm. Very shortly. It's.
Well, that's a matter of... I mean, if that is the case, I think actually that we in the UK maybe we've changed, but last time they went to give us ID cards and we wouldn't even take that. The ID cards wouldn't catch on, no one wanted them. So I don't know if something like that, I mean, that's terrifying, obviously.
It's
like
fucking
big
terrifying.
Brother.
Yeah.
I can't comment on that, I haven't heard about it.
That's some 1984 shit, whoa.
If that is the case.
I'll show you the article.
Please do. I mean, obviously, I believe you.
No, I want you to read the article. Yeah, I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to read the article. So, yeah, no, it's very scary, man.
But,
and I feel like people don't really know about it. I'm not surprised you've never heard of it.
Yeah.
If you don't read... if you don't read things like Drudge Report, you might not hear. It's not in. They're not putting it in mainstream media.
Okay.
That's for sure.
Okay. Well,
it's
this
not
is
on Fox
I'm
News.
Not. I mean, the other issue, obviously, is the way that news is distributed via social media these days.
Clickbait, right? Are you talking about clickbait?
Yeah. I mean, the buzzword obviously is fake news, isn't it?
Right.
But it's not. You know, I don't think it's a boy crying wolf or anything. There is a really big problem that's shaping politics with the way that news media is distributed via social media and what's commonly referred to as the echo chamber and all
mm-hmm.
this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is that a lot of this extremist politics... So in the UK, I'll explain, we have a new... it's been a while now, but a relatively new leader of the Labour Party, who is obviously like the equivalent of the Democrats, I guess,
right.
In the US. And they were very much in the middle.
You're talking about
so
whoever's
fighting Tony Blair
Theresa
in the,
May right
you had
now.
Yeah, you had Tony Blair in like the 90s.
The war times.
90s,
with Bush.
2000. And he was, you know, very middle ground.
Yeah.
So this Jeremy Corbyn is, he's a politician. I think he's been an MP since the 70s. But he really is a full-on red socialist, pretty much, in his kind of... He doesn't, you know, obviously he tempers it down because he's now the leader of the opposition party, but his background and his kind of affiliations within the Labour Party. But so to a lot of people, he's like almost like a messianic figure. I don't know if I'm being taken in by the propaganda that's being spat out. He has been viciously attacked, his character and his like political leanings, but I see a big problem on the left as well as the right. I think there's a big problem.
Of course there is.
Because the leaders of both parties are either responsible
or going to be responsible for death, killing.
Yeah, the problem is that like these, I think that politicians need to be like,
kicked out.
But no.
Kicked
well,
the fuck
well,
out.
No, well, okay, yeah, maybe, but like in the absence of that, like they need to be 30% ideological, 70% pragmatic, but these guys are not, they're extremists like we were talking about.
Mm.
The Conservatives are the party now have gone further to the right. And all this stuff, sentiment that's circulating is advocating this extreme view. It's mainstream now. Whereas I found the news used to be a dispassionate reading of the day's events.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's loaded with emotion because you've got these reports from smaller media outlets. Everyone can self-publish.
Right.
I think it's... people are easily riled up, you know? It doesn't take much. If something validates your... what's it called? Is it confirmation bias or something like this? But, you know, there's something... when you see something that chimes with your worldview, you just swallow it hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. That's like a human impulse,
yeah,
no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This, oh, wow, this is completely...
well, we're tribal, right? We're tribal. Humans are tribal, so we try and find the right fucking tribe, and we fight
for
it. But
I think that's actually like a psychological default fucking glitch in the human brain that allows people to be manipulated.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're tribal, and we rely on other people to tell us the version of the events and describe
the
world.
We want the tribal leader to tell us how to run our tribe.
We don't want to work it out for ourselves. There's too many variables.
Exactly.
But so that's why I think I can't believe what's happening at the moment. I can't believe that people are just sitting by and letting this happen, I guess. But I guess I'm not that surprised as well.
Neither am I. People have been sheep since the beginning of time.
But I think it's an exponential kind of change that's happened very recently.
In you're speaking specifically of the UK or of England?
I'm talking about the world with social media and the way it's politics and revolutions and God knows
what. We don't even know how humans are evolving because of this whole internet social media shit.
Well, I think I understand it. I don't like it at all.
Why? What don't you like about it?
I think it's so important. Like, oh my God, like, we're in Valhalla, in the town of Pai in northern Thailand, where the people are so welcoming here and so happy to see us.
Yeah.
And like, it's almost like a holiday treat to be among people who are so socially accepting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not fair because like at work I've got wonderful people who are my friends. I couldn't, you know.
But did you expect to travel to Thailand and have this?
No, these people are strangers, but they're so welcoming.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's... and I think like if that's something you have to leave the country for, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's like... there I think is. Social... I don't want people to become socially detached. They need to become more...
well, that's happening at a phenomenal rate.
The problem with society, Western society, a lot is alienation and what we call in sociology, anomie. It's called anomie, which is basically a state where you become suicidal because your social connections are basically not there.
Right.
You know, you're no person's an island.
Right.
Or should be. Too many people are.
You need
so many lonely people.
If you don't have a friend, not a whole circle. If you don't have a friend that you could call and laugh with, life is very sad.
Yeah, exactly.
Life is very sad. Like, I've been in points in my life where I had zero people around me because I was a fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, and those were the most sad moments of my life. So I understand what you're talking about. It's so important. Social structures are so important to human, only creativity, but...
it's like opportunities for social interaction. That's what's decreased, basically.
Hmm.
And, you know, like, I mean, I've met my neighbor. I know some people who have very good relationships with their neighbors. Chris was telling me he's got a great relationship with one of his neighbors. I don't know, man. I think there's something stopping people from connecting a lot of the time. Not to say that connections don't happen, but it's opportunities. And when you're an old person or a disabled person or someone who's lost their family or a homeless person, you know, if you don't have a welcoming world there for you, then it can be...
sad as fuck.
Sad as shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sad as fuck.
All right, man. I feel like we had a good chat.
Done?
I think I'm running out of steam.
Thank you so much for coming on, brother. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure. I hope my inane rambling...
No, it was... I think it was a very interesting...
extract some sense from
that. I think
that.
It was a very interesting podcast, and I'm very appreciative that you did it. So thank you so much.
That's cool, man. I felt like the topic's kind of...
How long did we do?
I don't know, man.
50 minutes. We're pretty much done anyway.
That's good for me.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. Stay tuned. I have someone... not stay tuned. Get the fuck out of here. Check out the next one. Another very interesting coming up. Interesting one coming up with a defense contractor that was in Afghanistan for 2 years. So, yeah, hit up the next one. Woo! Thank you for joining that gypsy motherfucking cunts. Bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.